This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the September 30th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in what looks to be the real kickoff of Breeders' Cup season on the eve of some super exciting races from coast to coast and even over in Paris as well. And because of that latter fact, we have a nice addition to the usual crew today, talking about our special guest. We haven't had him in a while. He's always good for the sardonic comment and the sharp insight. He is Marcus Hirsch. Marcus, how are you today?
Very sardonic. Thank you. No, it's good to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Of course, from the DRF offices in New York, we also have Mike Hogan.
Hello, Pete. Hello, Marcus.
And in an unidentified flying object hovering somewhere over the planet of Texas, it's Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's up?
We lost.
Is this the usual? He's just stuck on mute, or did we drop the call here? JK, let's try that again. You there?
JK, phone home.
Yeah. I hit mute. And then, I'm having such a rough day. I said that I'm going to have to Google that word. That was a confidence killer. The mute button being on, another confidence killer. And then I was walking by the mirror the other day, and I realized like I got like a unibrow. I'm just having a rough day.
Well, I don't know.
Unibrow just popped up overnight.
I guess so. I guess I just need to look in the mirror a little bit more and sort this out.
So that get off. Actually,
I'm gonna have to look for something.
Happened to me yesterday. I'm like, wait, hold on.
Well, you guys, if I were you, I'd get out on the basketball court because I hear there's a correlation between unibrows and rebounding ability. So you might want to try to work it while you got it. That's my advice as far as that goes. We got a jam-packed show today, really just analyzing races. I don't think we have time for much else with so much excitement happening in terms of getting a line on, you know, some of these races are obviously dominated by the presence of hot favorites. But still, when it comes to that, we can talk about what we want to see for these horses as we lead up to the Breeders' Cup. It should be good. And without further ado, I think we'll dispense with one of the least interesting, at least from a betting perspective. I'm talking about the Turf Classic Invitational at Belmont. I think it needs to be said, pouring rain in New York right now. Looks like those conditions are going to continue. So obviously, I think this race will stay on the turf, being a grade one and all. But I think you got to expect soft turf. And in your handicapping for the day for Belmont, do keep in mind that we're going to be looking at soft turf or off turf for some of the minor races. Marcus, as our special guest, I'll ask you a question I've asked the last three or four times this sucker is run. How much of a percentage, if any, of your multi-race play will include Flincher?
Well, I mean, I don't see. I don't have to include them in everything for the most part. The rain is not a positive for him at all. He, you know, throughout his career, they've always sought out better going for him. He likes to stay on top of the ground, and it's not. He's not gonna enjoy it. But I mean, you go look at the three other horses. I mean, to me, the main danger in the race was Money Multiplier. I really think he's an improving four-year-old ran better than a lot of people give him credit for last time at Saratoga. But if you look back at his form, the worst race that you see, you know, was the last time he was on soft ground at Belmont, too, in the Hill Sprint. So, I mean, I don't think it advantages him at all. I'm not buying any Ecto stock. I mean, he was okay, you know, on soft 8 years ago or something in France, you know. I mean, and he just has not looked to me. He's been through a lot, obviously, and he's not looked the same horse he was when he came into the 2014 arc as a horse that people thought might have a chance to win that race. I haven't been paying close attention to Belmont recently. The ground was pretty hard coming into this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of rain in New York, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing you got to think about, too. You know, if the course was, I mean, that course tends to really get very, very highway-ish. And if that's how it was, you know, leading into today, maybe it's not that soft. You know, maybe it doesn't turn it into a bog-like thing, and it's more, you know, just there's a little bit of give to it. I mean, I would hope that would be the case, because a four-horse race is bad enough it is, and if we get some messy race in a fog, you know, that makes it even more complicated.
Jonathan, let me just ask you point blank. What did you think of Ecto's last race?
I thought I felt bad for making you bet the horse when you weren't planning on betting the horse. So I think I felt awful.
That's not your fault. That was my fault. I was supposed to be off that day.
No, but he was supposed to be better than those horses. I mean, really.
Oh, it was ridiculous. It was a ridiculously bad performance. I mean, it would have to be in the No Excuse Hall of Fame. And the idea that a horse could come off an effort like that and trouble Flincher is frankly laughable.
Right. You know, I think there's a handicapping point that can be made in this race. It seems kind of silly making it in a race with Flincher in it just because it seems so likely. But I think that I always struggle with European horses that come over here because I always feel like the majority of the reason they came here was for firm ground. And I never know what to do with them when it's soft. Because, like, there's the angle that they came over here to avoid that. But then there's also the angle that they're still going to act better on a soft ground than our horses. So I literally never know what to do with them. It's always a tough decision for me.
How are you going to approach
really
this race?
That's a really good point.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of them do also come over for Lasix, to be fair.
And this horse, I think this horse came for Lasix and as much as anything.
But in terms of the specifics of your play in this race, Jonathan, is it a straight-up pass? Is it a single and multis? Do you have anything vertically for us?
I mean, I think you turn it into the pick five, even though they are offering the pick five, right? They're offering the pick five this weekend. Yeah, they're offering the late pick five at Naira on Saturday, but you can make the pick six a pick five and just single the horse and move on.
Mike, we've probably spent too much time on this race already. Anything to contribute different than what these guys have said?
Not at all.
All right, let's just move it straight on then, Mike. We'll let you start off. We're going to skip over the Gallant Bloom, which is the seventh race. It is the top. All right, if you have a quick thought on the Gallant Bloom, you can hit us. Who's going to win that, Mike?
Wonder Gal.
Okay, is that all that needs to be said?
All that noise coming from your mouth for a 5-2 shot. Jeez, Louise.
I'm channeling Jonathan Kinchin here, you know. I mean, I can only hope if she gets bet down to 4-5, and then I'd really be channeling Jonathan Kinchin.
Well, I mean, I will say, you know, Wavell Avenue is the 2-1 favorite in that race, and if she's really the favorite, then it becomes a somewhat appealing race because I don't like her at all.
Right, exactly.
It might be tricky. We have another situation without much apparent pace, you know, relative to what I would think Wavell Avenue would need. So I mean, I do get the Wonder Gal case in terms of opposing that one. My eye, not necessarily thrilled with the price either, but my eye was going to Paula's Silver Lining to maybe get the best trip out of all of them. Either of you other guys on the panel have a quick selection or thought in the Gallant Bloom?
I like those two, Paula's Silver Lining and Wonder Gal. I think one of those two horses win.
I didn't tell you to even look at the race, JK. Have you had a chance to look at it yet?
I looked at it a little bit. I think the Mom Amia or Maria or whatever is interesting underneath. I mean, I don't think the horse can win. But I think at a price, she'll be forgotten if you wanted to use in second and third of an exact or a try.
All right. The next race on Belmont's card is the eighth. Not a grade one. We weren't planning on talking about it. It's the Pilgrim. This is one where I think, you know, you really got to keep an eye out for that that soft turf. Maybe some breeding-oriented players will try to come up with an angle there. Big favorite, I would assume, is going to be Oscar Performance. It's interesting, though, they did enter the MTOs. I suppose there's a world in which this would come off. Marcus, how much rain do you think we're going to have for this race to come off the turf at Belmont on Saturday?
More than it's going to fall. I mean, I didn't see that it was going to be a deluge over the next 2 days. I would guess that this will stay on. I mean, it is a quote-unquote Breeders' Cup prep, but I don't think they want it to come off. I'm actually, like, tracking the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf for the daily racing form, and so, you know, I'm kind of aware of the division. And this race is absent, I'd say, the top three or four. Well, I mean, I guess you could say that Oscar Performance, he was impressed the second half, but there are the Bourbon is going to be probably a better race at Keeneland than this race is. And it's just, I mean, I don't think that there are super live Breeders' Cup horses in this race, although it is an interesting race, you know, from a betting perspective, I think.
Let me ask you, just to keep the theme of the show going, Jonathan, what did you think of Lazo de Guerre's last performance?
If I'm correct, I think that was the chandelier of the year, wasn't it?
it's either that or Ecto, I think, are the two in the conversation for Chandelier of the Year.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
That's about the side of it. Let's move on to the Vosburgh. This one we're going to talk about for real. Mike, I haven't heard your voice in a while. We're going to make you lead off sincerely with your thoughts on the Grade 1 Vosburgh at Belmont on Saturday.
Well, you know, this is AP Indian's race to lose, I think, right? He's going to be a short price. And the other logical contenders are Holy Boss, who hasn't won since Ecto won, I think, right? And XY Jet, who's coming off of a long layoff for Jorge Navarro, who does well off long layoffs but never wins in New York. So,
do you have stat handy, by the way? I was going to ask you for that stat.
Oh, I don't.
Okay, but it's like 2 and 20-something. Last time it was 2 and 20-something.
It's like 4 for 50-something, but 2 of the 4 were private zones. So take that for what you will. I mean, maybe this horse is good enough. If he gets a lonely loose lead, maybe, but there's a lot of other speed in here, not least of which being Green Grotto, who's known to surprise at a big price. So, you know, if I was looking to do anything silly, maybe underneath, stall-walking dude, I think, seems to have found his better form. He does okay on a wet track, and he should get a pretty decent setup he could be running on.
It's AP Indian for me. I'm not going to get cute there. Yeah. It's just a Maltese race. Marcus, how about you? Anything clever in the Vosburgh?
I'm not quite as solid on AP Indian. I mean, he's back a little bit quick for a sprinter. I'm not exactly sure why they're in this race if they want to win the Breeders' Cup. Because, you know, giving sprinters breaks before the big race is often a good idea. I mean, those horses, it's hard. It's very hard to keep duplicating performances when you're running that fast at higher levels. And he's inside the other speed too. XY Jet is a very, very fast horse. I'm probably a little more skeptical of the favorite, especially on a wet track, than maybe you were, Pete. And Mike, you did mention the horse Stall Walking Dude, who is a little bit interesting. We'll have to see how his price turns out. He used to be ridden right, which is taken back. You know, the last time he was in the mud at Belmont, he somehow went dueling for the lead. That is completely wrong. If he is eased back off the pace and they go as fast as they might, I think he's got a chance.
Jonathan, who do you think is going to win the Vosburgh?
Oh, I think AP Indian's a really cool horse. I think it's interesting if he wins this race. You know, Mike and I don't remember who started it, had a little bit of a discussion on Twitter on who would be the favorite in the sprint. Would it be AP Indian, Masochistic, or the Baffert, Lord Nelson? And I think if he wins this race, I just don't understand how he's not the favorite, but a lot of people seem to disagree with that. Look, XY Jet, to me, this is the type of horse that I want for Jorge Navarro, a horse that people, you know, the word is out on Jorge not being able to win in New York. The horse is coming off a long layoff. It's just, if the horse goes off at 5-2, I think he's going to win because I think the money will tell you that he's ready to run. If he's 7-2, then maybe next time's the time.
The numbers aren't as bad as I thought they would be on Navarro in New York. It's 4 for 34. That's a 12% win rate, 92-cent ROI. So, I mean, nothing good, but not exactly the stuff of stay away with a 10-foot pole.
The recent ones I can remember were coming off races where they'd already run big, is one thing I would point out.
Yep.
You know, those horses that lose get even, we remember those even more because we're like, oh, look, this horse just ran huge and now it's New York, but also, you know, just ran huge the last time too.
But if Steph Curry was missing free throws only when he plays in Miami or something, that would be a big alert. I mean, Jorge Navarro wins like 50% of his races everywhere else in the world, and 4 of 34 in a certain jurisdiction is a little bit something to have some concern about.
Oh, I do think there's some concern. I just actually expected the numbers to be starker. Though Mike did point out that a couple of those were private zone, who's maybe in his own category. I know over the years, the Vosburgh has not been a particularly productive race in terms of a prep for the Breeders' Cup sprint. Marcus, do you think that gets back to the point you made at the top of the discussing this race, where it's just hard for sprinters to put two races together within a month?
Yeah, I do. And this year in particular, when you're going to California, I mean, I don't think the New York sprinters tend to perform very well there. I mean, the California horses seem to do well coming east, but going what? Like, for instance, AP Indian, he's probably a little bit, he might be a little bit better at 7/8, and he's run a lot this year, and he's an East Coast based horse. When we get to the Breeders' Cup, it's a horse I'll be looking probably to play against.
Me too. I'm with you, Marcus. I mean, I hope he wins for fun here, and I hope he goes favored in the Breeders' Cup because I'm way against him in Santa Anita.
We'll be talking about that way more. We're going to have some expanded coverage on the podcast for the Breeders' Cup, doing some extra shows, some extra segments. So we'll get into all kinds of stats about how the preps do historically and all of our thoughts. Marcus, maybe we'll try to steal you back for one or two of those shows. Could have some fun.
I'd love to.
All right, let's talk about race 10 at Belmont on Saturday. It's the Beldame. It's another grade one. It's that one turn, mile and an eighth. You had something, Marcus?
Did you put air quotes when you said grade one?
All right, just for that, you get to start with this one.
Well, I mean, when the first horse you see is Tiger Ride in a grade one dirt race, that should, and no disrespect to the trainer or the horse, it's an admirable horse, but I mean, she does not come to mind for me as the next Royal Delta or anything.
No.
I think it came up a very, very soft spot, which does not mean that, I mean, that makes it, I guess, kind of an interesting betting proposition. Forever Unbridled is obviously going to be an overwhelming favorite, and she is clearly the best horse in the race. I mean, if she were to run her standard race without trouble, she will absolutely win this race for sure. But, she's never been on a wet track. The trainer was expressing some skepticism to her dealer equity forms, Dave Grenning, about running on a wet track. And the other thing is that Dallas Stewart has made a point of spacing her races way, way out all year for whatever reason. And now, she's coming back on much shorter rest. I think it's a great spot, which is why she shipped for this race. But often, that sometimes when you change the pattern because you want to get the spot, not because it's what you've been doing with the horse, it just doesn't end well. I would be terrified to hang my hat on her, like in the pick five or the pick six as a single, even though on paper it looks like she should win.
Who would you use as your backups, Marcus?
Everyone else or something. I don't have a strong opinion.
Gotcha.
I don't have a strong opinion about anyone else in the race.
Yeah, isn't it amazing we live in a world where, and I agree with what you're saying, not criticizing, but it's just amazing we live in a world where August 27th to October 1st is considered coming back quickly.
Well, for her it is. I mean, yeah. And not just that, I know the horse really well, and I've talked to the trainer, and that's been the plan all year. He said she does really well with a lot of time between races, and her form has borne that out. She's run really well all year. I don't know if it was a mile and an eighth last time or not. I didn't think she didn't have quite the punch and the stretch that I expected her to have. Maybe she won the mile and the 16th, and maybe a long one-turn race like this is really good for her.
Yeah, Cavorting also was just so, so good that day. Certainly that needing time between races, that fits sort of the stereotype of Unbridled Songs, right? I mean, isn't there sort of a saw about them that more time between
well,
races,
yeah,
good,
I mean,
they can get a little ouchy?
Right, they could be, they're incredible. The sire can get some of the best dirt horses anywhere. I mean, especially horses that can show speed and sustain it over a route of ground. But yeah, I mean, it's not just him. He was representative of a longer line, going to Fabiano of, not being, just having horses that don't stand up to training as well as maybe some other branches of the thoroughbred, gene pool.
I'm always happy when we can get a Fabiano reference here on the DRF Players podcast. Mike Hogan, what do you think about the Beldame?
Well, I'm not, so far this is the I'm not disagreeing with Marcus podcast. I think she's the horse to beat, but I think it makes sense to try and beat her for a lot of the questions that have been raised. And I don't know how much I would be really betting to do so, but this is a really interesting race, particularly to help try and gauge the form of, say, a horse like Songbird. You've got three-year-olds facing older in here, and if any one or maybe all three of them run really well, it gives us a little bit of information going forward about how Songbird might do against older in the Breeders' Cup. So for me, that's the most interesting angle here. That said, I don't know who the most likely winner is if it's not forever unbridled. You know, but a horse like Rachel's Temper is a little interesting to me, seemingly on the improve now in the barn of Charlie Baker, who's been doing well all year. And it's just a huge vote of confidence to try her in a spot like this, a track that she seemingly does well at. So,
Jonathan Kinchin, you're never afraid to single a shorty in a multi-race sequence. Is Forever Unbridled a shorty that you're going to single?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how she loses. I mean, I guess Off the Tracks has a little bit of a tactical advantage here, but I think that Paula Queen is in here just to get grade one placed. She should be running in the Gallant Bloom. She clearly doesn't want to go two turns. Those races just weren't that good. She obviously excelled. She's a grade one winner on and one turn. I mean, it's one of those races where I would like to try to get really cute and pick someone other than Forever Unbridled, but I really don't see where the value is there. If I'm playing in a tournament, I'd be using Going for Broke. But I'm kind of like the other guys. I don't have much of an opinion here.
What's the case on Going for Broke?
Oh, it's really kind of a boring case. It's Chad. The horse is improving, lightly raced. Obviously likes more ground, ran well going a mile and a quarter. I mean, she was beaten seven, but that's okay to lose by seven to Songbird. Just really, like I said, it's one of those deals where in a tournament, Forever Unbridled's not going to do me much good. And I'm not crazy about a horse that has that many layoff lines, but she just feels like she has no choice but to win this race. And I'm like completely against Off the Tracks. I've never bet Off the Tracks, and I promise I never will bet Off the Tracks. So and she's one of those horses. If she wins, I lose.
Certainly seemed short enough at the morning line of 5-2 into the teeth of Forever Unbridled. And I assume, Marcus, from the fact that we're talking about going all here, that you weren't a big fan of the second choice. Is that fair to say?
I would probably not play all because I don't like Paola Queen, you know, and I know, and I'm not probably Tiger Rye drawn inside, and I'm not maybe Rachel's Temper I probably would use. I mean, Penwith, they're just dying. I mean, they're like, this horse has a lot of pedigree, you know, it's Godolphin. They would love to like somehow squeeze a grade one out of her. I just don't see it happening. She's utterly exposed. I would definitely concentrate on the three-year-old, and I, the horse that Jonathan mentioned is the one that would appeal to me most. Is Going for Broke. And another thing that you know, she won in the Slough at Belmont too. You know, she broke her maiden doing that. I'm not saying that race was nearly good enough to win this race, but it's tough, you know, conditions that she handled, and you know, she's got a little bit of appeal. Hopefully, at more than 6-1.
Interesting that to see that career best buyer speed figure only by a point, but still did come in the one turn. That's back in June. You can certainly project.
She loves Belmont. There's no doubt. Yeah.
So yeah, cold 2-5 for me. Very boring there, but it is what it is. Hey, we've done this whole Belmont thing. We've given people the first five of the races in the pick six. The last, almost impossible to say anything about. I would think this one has a maiden special weight likely to come off the grass. But has anybody in their handicapping come up with anything just real quick to give people to maybe round out their pick six bets on Saturday?
No.
No, I assume it'll be no's across the board probably, but just in case.
Yeah.
Just use Chad and you'll be fine. He didn't have one in here, so don't use Chad. You'll lose if you use Chad.
It's off the turf most likely. So you know, I don't know. Maybe a horse like you know, for Nick Zito at a big price, Jamaica, Led Zeppelin hunch play.
Gotta love the Led Zeppelin references. We'll keep them coming as often as possible.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, is Nick Zito, obviously the name comes from the owner, but it makes me wonder what Nick Zito's feelings about Led Zeppelin are. I'll have to ask him the next time we see him in the Gold Room, John.
I would think that the one horse undercover agent was entered maybe with hoping that it came off just based on pedigree, you know, and, mm-hmm. and she's never worked on turf. And then the two horse Save the Tigers also has a pedigree that I would say slants a little bit toward dirt too, being by Super Saver, and that horse is something that I always like to see. He cost $8,000 and he debuts in the straight maiden race for a competent trainer. So
good, some good points there. I always get that wrong. I say Gold Room. It's not the Gold Room at Keeneland. There might be a Gold Room, but the one where we were hanging out with Nick Zito is the Green Room, right, JK?
Yeah, think money, Green Room.
I don't want to, you know, get Jim Goodman upset with me for getting the names of the rooms at Keeneland wrong. All right, let's move out west to Santa Anita. Hopefully we gave you something there you can use for this pick six or late pick five at Belmont on Saturday. But the Great Race Place has plenty of action. as well. We're going to start off by talking about the Grade 1 front runner. We're looking at the two-year-old colts here. We talked about this race a little bit yesterday, Mike, on the webinar we did with Kevin Cox and Scott Carson. If folks want to check out the archive of that, they can look in our Twitter feeds or just go to drf.com/YouTube. Mike Hogan, I'll let you start. Who's your pick in the front runner?
Well, I think the horse you want out of the Futurity is certainly Straight Fire. And if Klimt is the favorite, I think Straight Fire maybe even ran the better race, set a really, really fast pace, and then was caught late by Klimt. Now looks to be possibly the controlling speed. I don't know, maybe Gormley on the stretch out's a little interesting. But most likely I would just try and play against Klimt and probably will end up losing to Bob Baffert like normal.
Jonathan, you'd take much, much better Santa Anita notes and Del Mar notes than I do. And I know you were very attuned to the track all meet at Del Mar. On the Futurity day, was it the dead rail that we saw so often at Del Mar? And do you believe that played an impact in the Straight Fire Klimt matchup that day?
Yeah, I won't say what the trip note says for this one. But look, this is one of those races where, you know, if you watch the Futurity, it's one of those races where you want to kind of kick DeSormo in the behind for.
Well, they kicked him right off the horse.
They did. They put him on the maiden.
I just don't understand why he does that stuff, man. Ride the horse and at least give the betters the appearance that you're trying. I think the horse was empty, and I get it. And that's why I think a lot of trainers like that he's a horseman when it comes to that kind of stuff. But just at least fake it. I mean, you could at least throw a couple crosses and fake hit the horse like you're trying. He kind of wrapped up on him when I needed the horse for a lot that day. I mean, he was definitely against it that day. He was on a dead rail. I know they've always thought a lot about the horse. I'm a Klimt hater, so it's Straight Fire for me. And I would look at Secret House a little bit. I mean, I think it's interesting. It's a Tis Now who I was lucky enough to see when I was out in Lexington, and that horse is a monster. You got to think that him winning at 4.5. Says a little bit about his talent, and all he really wanted to do was run longer. Blinkers off, Sheep Pond is involved. They own a little bit of every horse in America, so he's one that I would consider as well if Straight Fire gets a little bit too short for your taste.
Before we move on to Marcus's thoughts on the front runner, Jonathan, what did Klimt ever do to you?
You know, it's one of those horses, I'll be honest, like, we all have our weaknesses. When I fade a horse and the horse doesn't run well, I like pat myself on the back and I never feel like I ever want to bet him again. I faded the horse the first day he ran, and so I felt like I was really smart that day. And so I've always wanted to kind of fade him since then. And then he beats me and then he pisses me off. And I just don't really think he's that good, to be honest. But
you know what the cure is for that? we get you back to the backside to Baffert's barn and you feed the horse a donut, and then all of a sudden he'll be your favorite horse in the world.
That may have to happen ahead of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile if things don't go according to plan here. But yeah, I mean, I think this case for Straight Fire sounds pretty intriguing. What do you think, Marcus?
I am against Straight Fire all the way. I do not think that he can go this far at all. I know, you know, even taking into account the track surface and the whatever, you know, happened with the ride, I just think if you look at it, the sire, it's a young sire, you know, who I think is going to produce brilliant horses that don't want to stay. I think his chances of nursing the speed around two turns are very low. I think he's going to get run down. I'm not going to promote Klimt. It's a horse that I've always been skeptical of. Maybe not to the extent Jonathan has been, but he keeps improving, really. And there's enough mile, you know, middle distance to his pedigree. I think he's got a decent chance. And again, you know, he's a horse that strikes me as having been pretty fortunate in a lot of his races. And I think where he's drawn here and the way the race shapes up, he's in for another really good trip, probably, just sitting right off the speed. I think he's going to, I'm not going to play him. There's no way he's too short. And I don't think that he's not, to me, a top horse. I'll be surprised if he turns into that. And I could definitely see digging a little deeper. I mean, I think Gormley is probably not going to the front. I was surprised that he showed that much speed for a Shearer's first timer. And he, that horse is bred to run on a little bit. He probably, you know, at 8-1, it wouldn't be that appealing. And that the horse Plum Dandy, too. I mean, he's the horse that's already been two turns. You know, he beat the Vibe horse who's back in here. Didn't finish all that fast, but, I mean, there's something to be said for having already done it.
So it sounds like you're going to be price shopping just based on long shots, depending on what the board tells you. Is that a correct assessment?
Well, I mean, I would be using, off the favorites, I'm going to be going the other way and leaning more on Klimt if I'm doing that. And then, yeah, I wouldn't mind having a few longer prices in this race at all.
All right, let's move on to the seventh race. It's the Awesome Again, going a mile and an eighth, the return to the races of California Chrome. What else can you say about California Chrome in the year he's had? I've just thought it's just been eye-popping stuff in the last three races, and it doesn't appear to me like he's going to have too much trouble here. One note, if folks haven't seen it yet, it sounds like Hopportunity is going to scratch and run next week in New York in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Such fulfilling one of Matt Bernier's great dreams in his brief time in racing. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there. That took my one sort of half-clever vertical idea away, leaving me with California Chrome and a whole lot of nothing. Marcus, we'll keep it with you. What are your thoughts on Chrome's chances here?
Apparently you're not a Dortmund fan, Steve.
It's not that I don't like Dortmund. I just don't – I haven't seen anything to suggest that he's going to – ever beat California Chrome on the racetrack.
Did you see the San Diego?
I did. I thought that was the day. And if it didn't happen then, it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, wow. Because I thought the horse had every right to be a little bit short in that race, you know, and also was stuck inside the whole time. It's kind of role reversal here. I mean, he has the chance to stick California Chrome down inside the whole way unless Espinosa is dead set on taking back and coming around. And there's a little doubt in my mind that Dortmund is going to go forward straight out of the gate this time. I mean, that's the big thing. Yeah. And I took Dortmund over California Chrome because it's cutting back to a mile and an eighth. It's his third race back after, I think he bounced a little bit last time after the hard race in the San Diego, and maybe he doesn't want to go a mile and a quarter. And also just as far as, I mean, if he's not really a mile and a quarter horse, is he going to win the Breeders' Cup Classic? I mean, maybe not. So this is kind of this would be a great race for him to win. I mean, just as far as what your objectives are, there's a lot more incentive for him to run his very, very best race here than there is for California Chrome. And, you know, they're not only the post positions reversed, the numerals and the odds are reversed, 2-5 versus 5-2. So I am predicting a minor upset.
You make a compelling case. Jonathan, again, I don't do the California work the way that you do. I actually, though, just in a quick look at the charts, did not have the day of the San Diego as a day where the inside was a bad thing. What did you think? Who did you think was better in that race, and what do you think is going to happen here?
I had the track fair that day. Actually, the rail was bad, but... But Dortmund wasn't really. He was like in the three path the entire race.
They were
so,
both off the rail.
Yeah, so no one was really affected by it. At least we didn't have it marked that way. You know, the thing about Dortmund for me that is a problem, and I had to crush our friend Eric Bielek. He's the president of the Dortmund fan club. I had to crush his dreams yesterday when he asked if the horse had a chance. I mean, Baffert adding blinkers to me in this situation is such a negative. And I actually looked on Formulator to see how many times he's added blinkers to a four-year-old. And he's only done it, a four-year-old or up, he's only done it four times in route races, and none of them have ever run well. And the names of the horses are they're horses that aren't very good. I just think it's a bad sign. Excuse me. And a sign that it doesn't feel like it's a sign of confidence. And it's like they're reaching for some reason to try to turn the tables, and I just don't see how it can happen.
What do we think about the pace in here, Mike? I mean, Marcus raises a good point about the idea, sort of a well-known thing that Espinosa doesn't like Chrome to be out on the rail. It seems to me like Chrome would just go from there Dortmund with the blinkers, I agree with Marcus's point that he's going to go. Are we just looking at a match race type situation here in the first half mile? How do you see it playing out?
El Huerfano, right? El Huerfano. No, I'm just kidding. It's a match race. I mean, come on. It's going to be a jockey tactic race, right? And I think exactly what these guys have talked about. You know, you're going to have Bejarano trying to pin California Chrome down on the rail, trying cross over on the turn, and then just kick away and see how far he can take this thing.
Why would Victor Espinoza ever let that happen, though?
I'm not saying, you know, sometimes you don't let things happen. Sometimes things happen. Maybe this happened. Maybe the last week, Dortmund had a little conversation with another Kaleem Shaw, Bob Baffert horse, and got some pointers about how you break in and kick away after the start. I don't know. I mean, it can happen, right?
Oh, man. Well, we have seen that particular move before. I'll give you that. What are your thoughts on the race? Who do you think is going to win, Mike?
You know, I don't have anything cute here. I think California Chrome is the best horse. And I think, you know, the San Diego, I think, was the time to beat him. Because even though Dortmund was coming off a longer layoff, that's more what Baffert does. Cranking horses up, getting them ready off of long layoffs is a Baffert thing. And he kind of regressed a little bit in the second start off the layoff. Conversely, Art Sherman isn't that same style trainer. He tends to give them one, and then the horse does better second out. And that's exactly what you saw last time in the Pacific Classic. So maybe Dortmund moves forward a little bit off that regression, and it makes them a little bit more evenly matched than they were last time out. But yeah, the blinkers kind of concern me. Bejarano came out after the Classic and said he doesn't want to go that far. There's just so many question marks here to try and beat a horse who, let's face it, is the best dirt horse in the classic division in North America right now. I'll probably just watch the race.
I'm not saying it would factor into the training at all, but there is also the idea that this is, in addition to being an obvious prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic, there is $1 million bonus at stake here. Art Sherman doesn't seem the type of guy who would train the horse any differently to try to get the bonus, but it does stick in my head that Pack Classic, Awesome Again, Breeders' Cup Classic bonus exists. I think I told the story on the show before of running into the fella who helps with the insurance with these things at the paddock bar in Saratoga in the days after the Pacific Classic, and he told me, you know, he was liable to have to pay if this his company was liable to have to pay if this bonus got landed. I couldn't even keep a straight face. I was just like, oh, sorry, man. So I kind of can't go against that, even though I think Marcus does make an interesting case, and it's going to be a heck of a horse race to watch. Speaking of interesting horse races to watch, let's turn our attention to the 8th at Santa Anita, the Rodeo Drive. I think we maybe could have just spent the hour going horse by horse in this race. Mm. It's a bit of a skull buster. At least that's the way that I saw it. Jonathan, I don't think I've made you start yet. Let's get your thoughts on the Rodeo Drive and who's going to win this?
I know who Mike thinks I'm going to pick. He's already.
Yes, there's a lot of history with you and Decked Out. That's been well documented.
Every morning I wake up to do this, I'm like, what horse can I not pick to throw Mike's argument off? I like Decked Out. I'm not sure if she's good enough, and you never know what ride you're going to get from her. I did run into Kent at the Derby and asked him about this horse instead of Exaggerator because I didn't care about Exaggerator. And he told me that she doesn't like to get hit. So if you ever watch a replay and you don't see him hitting her, it's because she doesn't like it. I think I'm going to go for a bomb here and probably pick Tis a Kiss. I thought the race at Del Mar was impressive. Get a price there. Talamo hasn't done all that great as of late on the turf, and that's probably a nice way to say it. And he killed me in my jockey bet, so I'm still a little bit mad at him. But I just feel like that horse makes a little bit of sense off of that performance. And at a big price, when trip's going to matter in these types of races, that's one that I'll be looking for to try to light up the tote board.
I don't think we ever talked about that on the show, your jockey bet. What are you referring to?
This summer there was a bet between four jocks at Saratoga and four at Del Mar who would have more wins. And it was kind of an even money proposition. The four at Del Mar were Bejarano, Pratt, Talamo, and Tyler Bays versus I'm not, don't laugh at me, but Jose Ortiz, Luis Saez, Junior Alvarado, and Joel Rosario. And the idea was that Javier, Arad, and Johnny were going to take a lot of wins, and that Flavian Pratt and Bejarano were going to be the two guys that won all the races out there. And I got beat by, like, I had a good lead, and then I ended up losing by 12 when Jose Ortiz decided he was Ramon Dominguez.
Yeah, that kind of worked against you, to say the least. All right, Marcus, what do you think about the Rodeo Drive? Any clever thoughts for us here?
Well, I mean, if you're handicapping it, I'd say the first thing to do is put a big X through the G1, because if you're looking for horses that are, you know, grade one performers, it's just you're not going to find them. I mean, it's a grade two, grade three kind of horse that's going to win this race, because that's the horses that are in here. I mean, my top pick would be Friendsified, who has never run in a graded or group based on any guy. But, you know, it's a 4-year-old Euro import who obviously, you know, is taken to North American racing, which is kind of everything as far as horses coming from overseas. And so you got that. And then secondly, her first two starts in this country were way short of her best distance. Those were just too short for her. And they finally got her out to a better trip, and she won comfortably last time, you know, in a minor stakes race. I think she's going to love the mile and a quarter. She's got an inside draw. She's going to be able to save ground. I like her, but I don't see how you don't spread around a little in this race, really, because there's just so many moving parts here. I mean, the horse that she beat, Generosidad, never wins, but she at least stays. And, you know, Decked Out, I have questions going farther than a mile and an eighth. And she only gets 3 pounds as a 3-year-old. Forrest from Arlington that I know is a pest. She ran really well last time in the Beverly D, because she went just so fast. But to me, it's just a mile and an eighth and lower, and she's not going to, like, steal off an easy lead. In fact, I think she'll probably track the pace. I think Electrum has a decent chance, and Sobradora Inc. would have a chance, but they're 13 and 14. You know, and even with some run to a turn, that's a pretty poor draw. Anyway, I'd probably use 3 or 4 horses in horizontal wagers here, definitely. Oh, and another horse that never wins again, but Queen of the Sand, I think, should improve off of the maybe, too. And she also stays a mile and a quarter. She'll be 30-1, I think.
For me, sort of an In Mandela We Trust play is number 4, Avenge, who I'll certainly be including on my tickets. Doesn't necessarily look like one who's going to stay, but great horseman that he is, great sense of these things that he has, and the effort last time stretching out the extra eighth. I'm not going to let Avenge beat me in this spot anyway. Another I would definitely want people to think about including in their multi-race wagers. Mike Hogan, how about you?
Well, before I give my thoughts on the race, first I'm going to say I've got it figured out. So if Jonathan knows that I know he's going to pick Decked Out and he has to find a new horse, I've got it figured out. It's go to the Richie Baltus, what route, right?
Has right, John? Move before?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean.
Well, you just reminded me that I'm going to have to get you today on that avatar, on your Twitter avatar.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Well, you could have got away with it.
That's fine. I don't care. That's fine. If you want to celebrate running fifth over my horse running eighth, then, you know,
I
mean.
It was a head-to-head and a bet.
Yeah,
that,
but that's.
JK, what do you think? What should the avatar be? What do you think?
It's either going to be a picture of me that says, like, I love Jonathan Kinchin, or it's going to be
give him the bath photo.
Maybe the bath photo. Maybe that's what I do. I think I have a picture of me with a shower cap on. It might be that one.
whatever floats your boat, Jonathan. All right. So my thoughts on this race. You know, I watched the maybe last out. You know, I see your point on Avenge, but I think she kind of got the better trip of a lot of the horses in the race, and I don't know if she wants to go this far. The long shot that appeals to me that I just don't know if is good enough was Fresh Feline, who made kind of that early run into a relatively slow pace and then just completely stopped in the lane. I think she's better than that. She's going to be a big price, but I don't know if she's the most likely winner in here. The one that intrigued me the most out of the race, though, and Marcus mentioned her, is Sobradora Inc., drawn way outside. She's going to have to get a little bit of lucky out from out there. But I think she ran a lot better than that fifth place finish looked. The dead heating for fifth place finish looked. I think she can improve off that effort. I think she'll sit a relatively good trip. There is a lot of pace in here. Zepesa is the one maybe you want from a last race standpoint. The Beverly V's come back really live, and she ran huge in there. But I'm concerned about her trip. I'm concerned about the distance for her. So I'd be probably looking to take a stand with some bigger prices. And Sobradora Inc. is probably my top in this one.
Jonathan, you watch the SoCal races every day. What do you think about that number 14 post at this distance when they're starting sort of partway up the hill?
It's not ideal, for sure. It's not ideal. It's usually not enough to talk me off of a horse completely, or to completely like eliminate a horse that I like. But if there's a horse I'm on the fence about, it's enough to influence it. Not that I know what this means, but keep in mind that this is a new grass surface at Santa Anita that they'll be running on today for the first time. So, like I said, I have no idea what that means. But if you happen to know what that means, then I just wanted to remind you that that was the case.
All right, let's move on to the Zenyatta, another that shapes up a bit like a match race on paper. Marcus, what do you think about this rematch between Beholder and Stellar Wind?
Well, I mean, Stellar Wind is the younger horse who seems to be going one direction and could make the case that Beholder's going the other direction as an older horse. And post-wise, I mean, I think Stellar Wind got the better of it. Beholder, they're going to have to figure out what to do with Val Dori, just who are outside. I got to go with Stellar Wind.
All right. That's bold. Jonathan, where do you stand?
Isn't that bold? I mean, she beat her last time, and she's a horse that, you know, I thought she ran a good race first time back too, with that ridiculous slow pace and the vanity. I know this is a prep for the Breeders' Cup, but she's had enough time and that, you know, she can run well here and come right back and run well again in the distaff. I mean, I think that she's got at least an equal chance at higher odds.
And you're certainly going to get higher odds. So if you feel that way, it seems like a likely bet, I would say. I mean, even would you go as low as 6-5, Marcus, or would you want at least?
No, I don't. I don't bet horses straight at anything like that price. Even at 8-5, I wouldn't bet her straight. But I mean, you know, if there's a
possible key for Maltese or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
JK, what do you think about the Beholder Stellar Wind showdown?
No games from Gary this time around. No jacking around. Straight to the front, and I think she beats her by 4 or more.
That is bold. We've got to, in their own way, 2 bold predictions here. Mike Hogan, settle the tie here.
I'm closer to JK on this one. I'm not as confident, certainly, as him, but I think that's often the case. I just think, you know, for what Jonathan was hinting at was I think Gary got a little overconfident in that ride. I'm not going to say he rode Beholder badly when he lost to Stellar Wind, but I think he just maybe underestimated how good Stellar Wind has become. I don't think that happens this time. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, she was getting 2 pounds last out. They're equal weight this time. I don't know. It's not very exciting, but I think Beholder's just better.
The big thing for me that puts me in the Beholder camp, as you could tell from the way I reacted to Marcus, has to do with just Beholder's fitness. I believe the things that Mandela said, and there was I can't remember who did it, and I feel bad I can't give credit, but there was the visual comparison of Beholder before that race and how she looked before the Pacific Classic, and she just looked a lot tighter, a lot fitter. I think we see the real Beholder on Saturday, and but I mean, hey, Stellar Wind is certainly an extremely worthy opponent. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes out. Let's move on to the Chandelier. We still have 2 more races I want to talk about because maybe I thought Mike Hogan wanted to throw something in on the Zip Me as well. But we obviously, while we have Marcus here, want to talk about the Arc. But before we get to the Arc, let's talk about the Chandelier. Mike, we'll keep it with you. Where are you going in this Grade 1? Goes as race 10th at Santa Anita.
You know, I wanted to get cute in here and try and make a case for some of the longer-priced horses in here. I just don't really see it, though. I think it's kind of a, you know, pick your favorite short priced horse, whether it's American Pharoah's Sister or whether it's Champagne Room. I think those are probably the two most likely winners. I'm sure Jonathan's going to make a case for his Richie Baltus horse stretching out. And maybe she has a shot, but with Honors, I think she's strictly a turf horse that they're just seeing if she can stand up on the dirt. And if so, they're going to run her in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Otherwise they go maybe try and get the Juvenile Fillies turf, noted and quoted. I just don't know if she's good enough against these. She's probably a sprinter. So not a very exciting opinion from me.
I'm hearing a lot of talk, but I want to hear a pick.
It's not exciting, but I think American Cleopatra should stretch out, should appreciate the distance. I think she maybe ran into a better sprinter last out in Union Strike. Maybe gets a good trip here.
She doesn't have the pedigree to stretch out, Mike.
That's right. Z did not want to go two turns, that's for sure.
I'm definitely going to keep my feelings about Liam's Map's ability to get 10 furlongs to myself in this podcast. But Jonathan, you were attacked there a little bit. Did Mike predict the future? Are you taking Zappercat here?
No, I'm against Champagne Room. That's my, you know, sometimes in these races, it's who you're against can be your strongest opinion. I'm against Champagne Room. Thought that she was with the track the two times that her last two races, and I don't really want her. I wanted to pick Noted and Quoted, but I kind of agree with Mike, and that was my fear. And him saying it out loud made it even more challenging for me. And I think I'm going to ultimately land with Honors. I think that filly's pretty impressive. I loved the way she was running on the turf. I wish I could see an interview with DeSormo about why he went in this spot. If his answer is because he knows that he can't beat Lady Aurelia in the juvenile turf fillies.
She's out.
Oh, she's hurt?
She's done. She bled last time. She's done till next year.
Oh, well, I guess they just want to check out the dirt and then maybe they'll go back over there. We'll see. But I just think she's a talented horse. You know, there's the dam's only had one runner, so you know, you figure it's a war front, they'll act on anything. So with Honors from the rail to the lead, no turning back.
Marcus, what are your thoughts on the Chandelier?
Well, I had exactly the same thought as Jonathan, as an anti-thought, because I don't like Champagne Room at all. I have no strong opinion in the race. I actually did like Zappercat's race, although she got through. I just like the way that she traveled, actually. You know, I thought she had a nice way of going and the pedigree to stretch out to a middle distance. I'm not that thrilled, you know, the one race, sprint, break, then up in class to a graded stakes stretch out. I mean, it's a lot to ask of her at not an especially appealing price. I mean, there are no compelling horses. I mean, I think the pedigree argument is there for With Honors, although the horse like that, who might not be quite fast enough to get to the front against some of these stretch out horses, the rail, being drawn on the rail could be a negative for her if she ends up, you know, not getting to the lead and then getting dirt kicked in her face for the first time. It could be an issue. I'm not a huge Noted and Quoted fan. I mean, I have not, the factor of the sire has just generally not done a lot for me, and I certainly don't see the horses getting better as they go farther. I don't know. Maybe it is Cleopatra. I thought she would stay a little better last time. And the argument that she might have gotten that quick, it could be better going farther. Maybe there's something to that. I mean, I still think it blows my mind that the horse was 7-1 first time out. And blinkers off after a win with this horse too is also. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff going on with this horse. I don't really know what to think of her. And that's kind of how I feel about the whole race. It's not a race that I'm eager to dive into.
Did anybody have a quick thought on the Unzip Me before we turn our attention to what's going on over in Europe this weekend?
I had a quick one. I'm against Belvoir Bay, who I think is a really good horse, but Peter Miller, I mean, it's just a little curious that this horse won a grade three on the dirt routing and now tries the hill for the first time. I think she's going to be over bet. Miller does not do well going dirt to turf with last out winners. And I'm kind of against Swift Lady, the Bob Baffert horse, who seems to like the hill. But I just don't know if she's good enough, and maybe she's facing ones that are a little bit better than her in here. The one that I like is Grand Motion's Miss Katie May, who ran really well last out, too well to lose, ended up losing to her stablemate. Had a nice win in the Alleywow. Granted, it's, of course, a different course, but at the distance in at Woodbine, I think she's probably the best one in the race, and you might get a square price on her.
Jonathan, anything real fast on this before we all start interviewing Marcus about the ARC and the other group ones in Paris this weekend?
I want Chicaboo a little bit there. I wish she showed a little bit more speed. It's the kind of cutback angle I like when they show a little bit more speed, but I think just on class, she's going to be flying late. And so, and Kent DeSormo, as much as he drives me crazy sometimes, he's been riding lights out on the turf. So, that's one that I would look at a price.
All right, Marcus, let's talk about Paris. What are the major storylines for American horse players to be following coming into this year's Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe?
Well, it's not a long chomp. That's the first thing to remember. That Grand, Bonchamp is under construction, and it's at Chantilly this year. It's another right-handed course. It's a little bit different than Longchamp. It's not quite as testing. The uphill portion is not quite as uphill. You know, one right-handed bend, not quite as long a bend as at Longchamp either. But it's not, I mean, not a huge, huge difference. It's not some completely different kind of track. They were saying good to soft today for the going, I read, but I had heard good throughout the week to the extent that they watered the course. I saw 40 millimeters that they put on to try to avoid getting too hard. You know, it has a couple times in the last several years. So I would expect good ground on Sunday, you know, barring unforeseen precipitation, which is fine. And the draw was today. You know, at Longchamp in the mile and a half race, everybody like freaks out if the horse draws way outside, and it's that way to a slightly lesser extent at Chantilly. And the Japanese horse Makahiki got 14, that caused him to go his price to get longer and antipus wagering, and Order of St. George drew 16. It's not a horse that I thought had much of a chance anyway. He's posted way on the outside. And then the favorite, Postponed, got 7, which is kind of an ideal draw. So he got dropped down to like 7-4, I think, generally in the betting so far. I mean, storylines, Postponed is the clear favorite in the race. He's had a great season. He's a very versatile horse. He's if he wins, he'll be a satisfying winner. The Japanese have been trying to win this race forever. Makahiki is their hope. He's been in France for a couple of months. He won the Prix Miel. It's a pure prep for this race. All the talk is that he needed the run. You know, he was very workmanlike and he should improve. I mean, so he'll be trying to break through. You've got Found, the filly who won the Breeders' Cup turf last year, who has had an excellent season without winning a lot of races. Aiden O'Brien's only won ARC, I think it was 2007. Dylan Thomas won, whenever that was. My years are all messed up. I mean, this is not an absolutely vintage renewal of a great, great race. I mean, it's a solid field, some interesting horses, but it's probably a couple of the very best ARCs that we've seen in recent years.
Let me ask you a couple of follow-ups. One has to do with the Breeders' Cup itself. It sounds like Postponed and Found are two horses who may have the Breeders' Cup turf as their next stop after this race. Is there anybody else who you think is likely to make the trip over to our shores that we should maybe be paying special attention to?
Well, it's a great Gatsby ran. Well, I think he would probably come because they've mentioned that race for him all year. I mean, I don't know that he could have an impact. He's just been a disappointment for the last two seasons, basically. But if he ran like fifth or sixth and showed something, I wouldn't be surprised to see him come.
And then, of course, I'm just curious if you have anybody you're interested in taking a shot at from a betting point of view from this far out.
Well, I mean, I think Postponed is easily the most likely winner. What speaks to his his solidity as a favorite is the fact that he has run well in such diverse conditions. You know, he was really, really good at Epsom, England, in the Coronation Cup earlier this year. And that was after he'd run well, really well, over a completely different kind of track, a U.S.-style left-handed flat track in Dubai. I mean, I thought Ashima class, I mean, he was just a really, really good horse with a lot of positive attributes. He did. He got sick and missed a race in midsummer, and they waited and came back into the John Bond International at York, and he was definitely not at his very best in that race. Now, I mean, I think it's more likely that he just was still coming back from being ill. The whole barn of, you know, Roger Berrien, who's a really, really good trainer, his whole stable was not doing well at the time, and he might probably won despite some things. But the other line of thinking, you know, if you're looking to oppose him, is, well, if he actually hasn't recovered from being sick, he might have gotten sick and might have been a little vulnerable because he had an active early season campaign. He's traveled a lot, and, you know, maybe he's not going to improve off that race. I mean, because he's going to need to. I mean, the one I would want, probably as an alternative, would be Found. I just feel like this has been the race they've wanted to win with this horse all year. I mean, she ran below her best form in the Arc last year, when I bet her, of course, and then she came back and won the next race, and I didn't bet her. But her last race on the Irish Championship, I think she's better at a mile and a half than a mile and a quarter. That was a mile and a quarter, and she ran into a really good horse in that race. And I thought that she stepped it up a notch from where she'd been before. And I could definitely see her coming forward one more time, even though she's had a very busy campaign. And she's sitting around 7-1 with the bookmakers. She might be a little shorter here than overseas because she's better known. She's well known from having won the Breeders' Cup. But that's the other horse for me. I'm going to go against Postbone.
She thrives on her racing. If you'll remember, not only did she run in the Arc, but then she went to Champions Day last year coming for the Breeders' Cup. So
that's right.
The busy campaign.
It's an iron horse.
Yeah, not necessarily a negative for her. Just a couple other things I want to mention. I picked up some cool notes on the sectionals from a guy I've mentioned before on the show, Simon Rowlands. Yeah. You can find him at Rowleyfile on Twitter. The sectional times for Makahiki, who you mentioned, Marcus, coming home in the Niel, last three furlongs in 33.42. And then another one I just wanted to make sure we got at least mentioned in the segment, the three-year-old filly. Three-year-old fillies have such a great record in this race based on the weight for age conditions, presumably. Left Hand came home that day, 33.63 in her final prep for the Arc. So I don't know. I might just throw those two together with Found and Postponed and see if we can't catch a nice exacta to start Sunday morning off on the right note, horse playing wise.
Yeah. I mean, the horses are there with the way the races are run there, and if the ground is good, they're kind of expected to finish. I mean, that's a little faster than par, I would imagine, but it's not. I mean, it's not utterly unbelievable. I mean, it's 11 pounds. Feet is what it like. Left Hand carries 11 pounds less than a horse like Postponed, which is why, I mean, it's grossly unfair in my opinion, and it is being addressed. The weight for age is going to change next year to some extent. It's not right that, you know, by virtue of being a three-year-old filly, that you get that much of a break in the weight this late in the year from an older horse. And it is why three-year-old fillies have done so well. This horse, though, is, you know, she's drawn wide, and the horse that was supposed to be so live, La Frestine, she got hurt last week. She won the Prix de Dion and beat this horse, Left Hand. I mean, she's getting some chatter overseas, as is New Bay for Andre Favre, who's won the Arc seven times. I will be surprised if those horses are good enough to win. But I like what you're saying with pairing Left Hand and Makahiki, who is, I mean, I'm not ruling Makahiki out. I don't know how good he is. Maybe he has more to give still. But those horses are getting, and he gets weight too. He gets 8 pounds from older horses as a three-year-old. So, if they can overcome the wide draw, those two could be effective.
All right, we've overstuffed the show today, but that's how much stuff we had to get to. Very quickly, though, from Jonathan and Mike, since we've kept you here, any closing thoughts, final thoughts as we head into this big weekend of racing around the world? Mike Hogan, we'll start with you.
I don't. None for me. This is a fun one, though.
You said it all.
I did.
That's good. JK, how about you?
I saw a cool tweet from Mike Maker that he won 8 stakes in September, and 7 of those are with horses that they claim. That's pretty impressive.
That's unbelievable.
I think they were all the same day at Kentucky Downs.
Yeah. I do have something to say about Mike Maker and Twitter. There's nothing that says boldness than a trainer listing their phone number on their Twitter profile page.
That is asking for trouble. I think I'm just going to leave it there. All right. I want to thank Marcus Hirsch for joining us today. Always great to have you. We'll do it again soon. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin for all his excellent thoughts. Mike Hogan as well, stalwart of the program. Thank you so much for all your contributions as well. But, of course, thanks the most of all to all of you out there for listening and downloading. We wouldn't have a show without you. We love to hear from you. You can find us at podcast@drf.com or up through our individual Twitter pages. Oh, we never did give your Twitter, Marcus. It's @DRFHirsch. Of course, I'm @LoomsBoldly, @DRFHogan, @UTBigHair. We hope to hear from you again soon. We will be back next week. Until then, may you win all your photos.